football on Off the Ball.
To start with my brother from another mother, Patrick Kluivert, you had Edgar Davids, you had Frank Rijkaard, you had, and if I need to name one, Frank Rijkaard was of course the man.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Football on Off the Ball with NoviBet, home of the best value in bet builder betting. Download and play today. 18 plus, see gamblingcare.ie. This is News Talk.
All right, you're very welcome back to the show. Delighted to say myself and Emma are joined now by the record England cap holder. She's played for Everton and Liverpool, for Chelsea and Arsenal, amongst others. Latter-day pundit, I think it's fair enough to say. The legend that is Farrah Williams. Farrah, how are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you guys?
Good. That a fair enough description? Latter-day pundit?
I'll take that.
You enjoying the punditry?
Yeah, no, it's really enjoyable. I mean, I thought I'd go into coaching, but I treat it pretty similar in terms of, sharing knowledge through the TV screens.
You thought you'd go into coaching. Was there a kind of a sliding doors moment there, or what happened?
A couple of things. I coached throughout my career alongside playing when the game wasn't professional. When I finished my career, I was coaching with the England under-21s for a couple of years, and at Reading as one of the coaches at the women's team. But yeah, just financially, it wasn't feasible without the experience that was needed to kind of get a top coaching job.
Has that changed now in the last 12, 24 months or no?
I think it's changing. I think it's still difficult. I think there's obviously more opportunities. We're seeing the likes of Remy Allen, Joe Potter. There's a few young female coaches coming through with head coach roles. So, yeah, it's certainly different. There's more investment in that through the FA. But I guess at the time that I was doing it, and now I'm so far with my punditry, it's probably 6 years without coaching, probably too long.
Never say never. Was it I'm guessing off the top of my head, but I think it was in Germany, maybe in the third division, there was a female manager of, Bundesliga. Yeah. Female manager of a men's team. It's something I'm always curious about as to whether this is something that, like, we're very much sleeping on and that will just become the norm down the track.
I mean, it can become the norm. I do think it starts, lower down. I think that the difficulty is that we don't have enough female coaches, maybe at the academy level, for the young lads coming through, and then it's alien for them to go through their whole coaching, I guess when they're as young players going through their whole coaching with male coaches, and then hitting senior level and be like, okay, we're going to put a female there, and they've kind of not had that representation or interactions with female coaches. So maybe if we put more in academy levels, it becomes more normal, and then obviously at the elite end, when it's there, it's not alien to them.
Yeah, definitely something I think down the track might see a lot more of.
Well, we're going to have that new rule coming in as well, where there has to be one female coach on coaching team, so I'm sure that's going to make some difference as well.
Yeah. You're joined us, Farrah. You're involved with Airbnb and WSL campaign to provide accommodation to players who, obviously, like we've touched on, maybe to some degree, without the big salaries of their male counterparts, are often struggling maybe to make ends meet and facing big bills, obviously, when moving clubs, and the movement is to help fill the gaps.
Yeah, absolutely that. I think the Airbnb Player Accommodation Fund, 1 million over 3 years, and that's spread between both Barclays WSL1 and Barclays WSL2 teams. And they can basically apply for this funding during the summer transfer window and obviously the winter transfer window. And basically the funding's there for players, as you say, for clubs that are probably a little bit further behind in terms of their growth and development as a club, where the funds aren't available through the club. This is where Airbnb come into it, and you can apply for it as a player, and it gives you enough funding to settle yourself down into a club for at least the first few months until you find something more permanent.
Is the hope that the growth of the game, that on the financial side, Farrah, that like soon or at least some point down the track, that like a fund like that isn't necessary, that salaries are enough, there's enough money swilling around the WSL and WSL2 that it's not required?
Yeah, I'm sure that they're hopeful of that. But I think, as you said, it's a slow process. I think in recent years, we've got a lot of different fundings in and probably not being used in the right way, in areas that actually it's needed. And I think this Airbnb player funding is needed more than probably anything in terms of that. You know, salaries are different, locations in terms of the cost of living in different locations, very difficult. And not every club, you know, do have that player fund to you know, certainly put them up. So I think this allows players to one, pick their own sort of accommodation quite early on. Airbnb, you know, we're all different. Some people, you know, want different things in terms of that being comfortable in their own living space. So I just think for me, it equals out the access across both Barclays WSL 1 and Barclays WSL 2, because the transparency between top and the bottom of Barclays WSL 2 is so big. The gap is still so big, and this equals that out. So players, wherever you're signing for either of those, you know, leagues, there's an opportunity for you to get that funding to make that living space a lot more comfortable.
Yeah, Farah, you can imagine when it comes to players trying to settle in at new clubs, especially in WSL2, where the contracts might not be as long and the salary is not as big and you're moving around a little bit more, that expense will just kind of take a stress and a pressure off a player, especially if you're just trying to make it as a professional.
Yeah, exactly that. And you mentioned the stress there. I think that's one thing. I think we've all moved before at some point, and the stress of moving is probably the most stressful thing to do. So I think for players, you're right, if they are moving. And I also think that it will allow for players to consider these teams in WSL2, Barclays WSL2, to, you know, go and sign for them, knowing that there is some form of funding there for their living situation, whereas previously it probably hasn't been there. And as you mentioned, their salaries probably haven't been of the level to be able to accommodate that.
And you're speaking obviously from experience around this as well, and I'm sure that's a big part of the reason, and your profile obviously, as to why you're involved in the campaign. You left home, I think, at the age of 17 and had some time around some years, I believe, in and out of hostels. Farah, can you share a little bit of your own experience?
Yeah, the game wasn't professional back then, and yeah, a lot different, I believe, now where the game is at. I very much doubt that those same, you know, situations will occur. They're certainly, I mean, look, the fact that Airbnb are there, I'm sure that sponsor would jump in at any point if they was to know, you know, that there are current players in that situation. So yeah, there wasn't the funding or support around at that time. So yeah, I was homeless for a period of time whilst I was playing, very young, and jump between hostels and, yeah, as I say, living on people's sofas, etc. But I'm sure that's not happening in the game now with where it's at.
Yeah. It manifested in one story that I saw. You'd I don't know if this fully explains it or not, but you can give us the details of it. You were, I don't know where you were at Chelsea or Everton, but you'd signed for Philadelphia and you'd signed with an agent and then had a change of heart because you wanted to stay in your home. I don't know, was that a link from your earlier experience, or again, if you could tell us a little bit more about that one?
Yeah, I'd made the move from, whilst I'd signed for Everton, I was still in a hostel in London. And when I got the permanent move up to Liverpool, I bought my first home. And then, yeah, I did sign for Philadelphia on a 2-year contract, but I literally had my house maybe for 2 or 3 months. And I think the decision to leave that, I couldn't afford to then keep that going without renting it. And so the thought of somebody, after just doing up my house the way I wanted it, the thought of somebody renting it whilst I was away for a couple of years just didn't sit well with me. So I ended up staying.
Yeah. And listen, it was Philadelphia's loss and the WSL's gain, obviously, in the long run, and very much England's gain as well, obviously, as it turned out. But money has changed a lot in the game, obviously, over the years. You'd mentioned or touched on it a bit earlier on, just in relation to the more amateur nature of the game, obviously, in your day. And you weren't getting paid at all, I think, even in your time, and very long time, at Everton. Is that right?
Yeah, so yeah, I mean, when I did sign for Everton, I mean, Mo Marley and her husband Keith, they were brilliant with players in terms of out of their own pockets. They would give expenses and things, and, you know, in terms of food and stuff like that, they would provide that. So as much as it was very amateur, they were two coaches in my time that, you know, put their hand in their own pockets to make sure that players were as professional, if you like, as they could be in a very amateur time of the women's game.
Yeah. We might get on to talk a little bit about you've travelled the opposite of the Katie McCabe path, Farah, and with a long stint obviously between those two clubs particularly, but also, like I've mentioned, about Everton, and you were 8 years at Everton, then you went to Liverpool. You're familiar with this the switch between rivals, albeit possibly, or historically at least, maybe a slightly different culture generally around how they're received, which maybe evidence of the last week suggests could be changing.
Yeah, I mean, it's very difficult in a women's game. I, at the time I moved from Everton to Liverpool, Everton were amateur and Liverpool were looking at going part-time. So you get a salary to train and then work alongside that. So mine was more the fact that I wanted to focus a little bit more on, you know, training every day and having the time to do that where I didn't have to, you know, be out working, you know, 9 to 5 or whatever and then do the training in the evening. I think in Katie McCabe's situation, I mean, for her, if I was in her situation, I'd be really disappointed with the way it was handled from Arsenal. You know, 11 years at a club, loyal player. I know Katie personally, gave everything for that club. And at 30 years of age, probably in the peak of her career in terms of her performances, you know, Ireland captain as well, to only be offered a one-year contract, I think it doesn't really show the respect that she deserved for what she's done for the club. And Manchester City, Chelsea and many more teams around the women's game were heavily interested in Katie. And, you know, at 30 years of age, there's no stability in signing a one-year contract. So for Katie, it wasn't a case of, you know, let's get my own back on Arsenal and sign to a rival. It was more about, you know, Katie lives in London, a team from London come in, they was prepared to give her more than a one-year contract, probably on the same salary that she was getting. So very much suited to her living situation, which, you know, we're talking about Airbnb and the funding. Actually, her living situation, she just bought a house earlier in the year. So it's probably an easy transition that she was able to stay in her house. And as you say, another team from London was prepared to offer a more longer-term deal than what Arsenal were at the time.
Adrian just mentioned the change in kind of culture when it comes to this stuff. I suppose it's the fan culture as well, with the growth of the game and the rivalries growing more. Even a couple of years ago, we didn't see much of an uproar, like when Vivian Miedemann moved from Arsenal to City, for example. But this week, the abuse that Katie has received online and pictures of fans ripping up jerseys and burning jerseys. What were your thoughts on that? I think I seen a clip of Bet England doing the rounds as well and saying, like, people really shouldn't be angry at Katie. It's more the club where their anger should be pointing towards.
Yeah, absolutely, I agree. And that's where I was trying to make the point before, is that you've got a player that has given everything to you for 11 years. And if you were to ask Katie what she wanted to do, she would have told you her preference, like Bonnie Shaw, because we've seen that situation where Chelsea come in for her and Manchester City managed to find a four-year deal, 1.4 million a year. So Chelsea were offered a 1.4 at 2 million, a two-year deal. So they're able to find it. Manchester City did that in Bonnie Shaw's case. Arsenal, for whatever reason, chose not to do that. So it is a club thing. You know, if you was asked Katie, her loyalties would have been with Arsenal. And as I mentioned there, I think the fact that, you know, Manchester City, Chelsea, amongst others, come in, I would imagine that Katie would be thinking, as I say, in terms of her, where she lives now and how close Chelsea is in terms of training ground, it's not too far from St Albans where she's located. And it was probably the easiest move and the longest contract, so it makes sense. But the club, in my opinion, should have done more to keep her. As I say, 30 years of age is not old and she's got good years ahead of her. So it's their loss. And fans will always be bitter. We'll never understand what goes on behind the scenes. And I guess it's, you know, it's not for Katie to explain that.
When it comes to that, when dealing with abuse as a player as well, she's obviously gone into international camp, has some massive games coming up in the next 4 days. How do you deal with that and put that aside as a player and then change the focus to what you need to do on the pitch?
Yeah, it's difficult, and it's different for different people. You know, I know as much as we talk about, you know, mental toughness, Katie is mentally very strong, but also I know she puts herself around good people. I know how much the Ireland team as a collective mean to Katie, and, you know, how supportive they are. So I'm sure in camp is probably the best place for her, you know, with the move just happening, that she's around good people that are very supportive of her and would have encouraged her with the move as well, in terms of, you know, they want that her to have that stability in terms of contract. So she's in a good place. I'm sure she would have turned off her social media, and maybe, you know, agents, just while this is going ahead in terms of transfer, will be running that. And her focus, as I said, I know Katie really well, and I'm sure her focus will be on Ireland and the fixtures she's got coming up.
Yeah, I see the Suzanne Rack piece in The Guardian. Anger at McCabe's move to Chelsea is forgivable. Crossing the line into abuse is not. And I'm pretty sure, like, when it was mooted, possibly even a year ago, if I'm right, where those links were cropped up last, like, it was on the record at that point that she had been a Chelsea fan as a kid. So it's not as if this thing sort of came from nowhere. And also, we couldn't expect her to sit in front of, you know, the media at her first press conference with her new club and be in any way apologetic about that. That's unreasonable.
Exactly. You don't have to remind Katie of that, because we signed for Arsenal actually at the same time in 2015, and we were both huge Chelsea fans. And I remember it was that year that actually 2016, when Arsenal played against Chelsea in the FA Cup, this is the men, and Chelsea were 1-0 up, and me and Katie were actually celebrating together. And we actually got told off, because obviously we're in Arsenal tracksuits, and it's like, come on, this club employs you, you shouldn't be doing that. Chelsea lost 2-1 to Arsenal. I only stayed at Arsenal for a couple of years and eventually moved on with my career. But as I say, I've spoke to Katie for we've been good pals now for the last 12 years. Katie, I'd be wrong to suggest she turned into an Arsenal fan, but she favoured Arsenal over Chelsea, probably because of her loyalty and I guess her employment of the club and what the club done for her in that period. They managed to turn her head during that. But Katie's always been a Chelsea fan. As I say, as a kid, when she came over from Ireland, you know, all she spoke about was Chelsea and the players she used to watch. So, yeah, I mean, you can't expect her to sit in a press conference and you know, deny the fact that she wore Chelsea kits as a kid, because it would have been out there. There would have been pictures of Katie out there in Chelsea kits as a kid.
It feels also like she is the type of character, as we know very well, that will really want to get one over on Arsenal the next time, you know, the first game they meet next season.
Yeah. I mean, Katie is just one of those players that puts her heart, soul and everything into everything she does. Very competitive player. That's one of her qualities. I think you can see that no matter what shirt she puts on, whether it be Arsenal or Ireland, you can really see that competitiveness in her. And that'll be no different. When she puts that Chelsea shirt on, she'll give everything for Chelsea during her period. But Chelsea have signed a fantastic player. And Arsenal, in my opinion, have really lost out on somebody that they already had, you know, on their books.
You can imagine with for next season, going into the new WSL season, with the losses that Chelsea have gone, massive leaders gone in that team. Obviously, Millie Bright retiring, losing your joint record goal scorer in Sam Kerr. Katie's probably gone straight in as almost a leader in that team as well.
Yeah, and I think that's something that Sonia Bonpastor would have considered. You know, they've got a lot of young players, and obviously the way that Chelsea are shifting in terms of their recruitment, they've gone heavily down, you know, buying young players for a big fee, and then eventually they'll want to sell them on. But the fact that I think Sonia this year recognised that, you know, young players aren't going to give you the success that Chelsea are used to, and you need some senior heads around that. Katie certainly goes in with those leadership skills and experience that she has across Barclays, WSL.
She has a lot of years left playing football. She looks as fit as ever. It's possibility that she's put down one of the best seasons of her career so far. So that's my caveat right to the next question, Farah. But she does turn 31 in September, and she's filled a lot of roles for Arsenal and indeed for Ireland over the years. Emma was making the point before I came on air, she's filled possibly almost all of them apart from goalkeeper. Just in that context, what's your view on like how she fits into this Chelsea system? It's a big departure for her, obviously, on that front. Yeah, how you see her game materialising as she moves into, let's call it, the autumn of her career?
Yeah, I mean, as you mentioned, I still think Katie has many years ahead of her. I mean, she's super fit, keeps herself, you know, well-conditioned away from the game. But you said it there, she started as a left winger at Arsenal. In recent years, she's moved back to that left full-back stroke wing-back position. And then in the Champions League this season, we've seen her at centre-half, so left side centre-half. So I would imagine that Chelsea would use her in that, you know, certainly down that left-hand side in whichever capacity, probably mainly at left-back. But also, I think with what they've seen, you know, against himself actually in the quarterfinals, when Katie went to centre-half, that actually she has the IQ, a good IQ as a footballer, and can play multiple positions. So, yeah, she's a versatile player, but I would imagine her playing somewhere along that back line on the left-hand side.
Was she on to you when the move was coming out, saying, Farah, what do you think?
I was on to her when I heard the move. I was actually on to her. I think it was maybe when Emma Hayes was there, maybe 2 years ago. I don't know if you ever remember the rumour that Emma Hayes was after in the January. And I was like, I live around the corner from Chelsea training ground. So I'm like, Katie, am I going to see more of you? Are you on your way?
Can you just go here?
When this one come up, and I knew obviously in January that, you know, it was already rumoured that Arsenal weren't prepared to offer her a contract. So I kind of knew she was on her way to where I didn't know. But as I say, as I started to hear a little bit more rumours about Chelsea, I was like, Katie, I think we could be seeing a lot more of each other now moving forward. Not sure that's a good thing for her.
When it comes to Chelsea then for next season, they obviously have a fair bit of work on their hands. They probably weren't expecting to finish the season where they finished it this year. And then how do you go about replacing Sam Kerr when you just think you're probably on the cusp of signing Bunny Shaw and that all of a sudden gets done by City and they go, no, you're not captain her, thanks very much.
Yeah, no, I mean, I was licking my lips at the thought of, as you say, Katie McCabe down that left-hand side of Bonnie Shaw. It was going to remind me of the Guru Wright and then Sam Kerr partnership that they had for many years. But, yeah, I mean, Chelsea have got work to do in the summer in terms of getting a number nine in. They obviously got Ramirez coming back. She was out for a whole season with an injury. So I guess they're already thinking that they've got a replacement already in terms of her. If they can get her back to the same sort of level she was producing before her injury. You know, Aggie Beaver-Jones and her form of late, you know, towards the end of the season was very good. But they do need a goal scorer. They need somebody that's going to guarantee them, you know, 15-plus goals a season, like Sam Kerr would and like a Bonnie Shaw does for Manchester City. So that's an area that they need to look at. Maybe centrally, centre midfield is another area, but I guess they're going to have a very busy summer ahead of them.
Yeah, Aggie Beaver-Jones is exciting, isn't she? If she can play seven-a-side all the time, she looks class.
She'd be the best player in the world, wouldn't she?
Yeah. All right, well, it's the Airbnb and WSL multi-year partnership, as we've been discussing, £1 million player accommodation fund. Farrah Williams, absolute legend. Thanks a million.
Thanks, guys.
Cheers.
Football on Off the Ball with NoviBet, home of the best value in bet builder betting. Download and play today. 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie. This is News Talk.